Scarecrow Jack and the witch called Constance had passed the time chatting pleasantly. She helped him find a secure place for his torch and the lantern Hammer had given him, and he thanked her shyly. Constance brought him up to date on what she'd discovered about the beast, and he was able to confirm some of her guesses through his own forest magic. Constance found his magic intensely fascinating, and not a little disturbing. Jack's communion with the forest owed nothing to the high magic she'd spent her life studying. His power came from the wild magic, the old mercurial force that linked man with reality itself. She was also rather worried to discover that Jack seemed just as scared of the beast as she was. If a legend like Scarecrow Jack didn't know what to do for the beast, what hope did she have? Constance put the thought firmly to one side. She would worry about facing the beast when she had to, and not before. And so she and Jack talked quietly together, and never once looked across at the trapdoor. McNeil slid back the two bolts and hauled the trapdoor open. Once again, a vile stench issued from the dark opening, filling the cellar. McNeil let the trapdoor fall backwards onto the floor and stepped back a pace. Jack batted a hand feebly before his face as though searching for fresher air. Hammer looked warily into the opening, his hand resting on the hilt of the sword at his hip.
Smells like something died down there.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
McNeil retrieved his lantern from where he'd left it and got down on one knee beside the opening and gingerly lowered the lantern into the darkness. The pale light showed the first few steps leading down into the darkness, all of them caked with dried blood. McNeil moved the lantern about, showing Hammer glimpses of the blood-stained walls. Hammer looked at McNeil.
This is a setup. Whatever's down there has to know we're coming. It's waiting for us.
Seems likely. But I'm still going down. Unless you've got a better idea.
Hammer started to say something and then stopped, staring silently at the dark opening. McNeil got unhurriedly to his feet again.
I'm going with you.
McNeil and Hammer looked quickly around to find Jack standing behind them. Jack said nothing more. He just stood there, smiling gently, waiting for them to make their decision. McNeil looked at him thoughtfully. So this was the legendary Scarecrow Jack, the wild free spirit of the forest. He didn't look as impressive as McNeil thought he would. His clothes were little more than rags, and though he'd apparently been through a recent drenching, he still looked and smelled as though he hadn't bathed since he was baptized. Yet there was something about him, something in the calm face and steady gaze that made McNeil want to trust him, even if he was Hammer's man. McNeil shrugged mentally. If Scarecrow Jack was half the man his legend made him out to be, he'd be a useful ally in the tunnels under the cellar. And right now he could use an ally he could safely turn his back on.
I've heard a lot about you, Jack. I wouldn't have thought this was your kind of fight.
This is everybody's fight. The beast will destroy the forest and everything that lives in it if we allow it to wake. You're going to need me down there, Sergeant. I can feel it.
He's right. I can't go with you. My magic makes me especially vulnerable to the beast. It might be able to use me against you. Jack's part of the wild magic. He can guide and guard you when I can't.
McNeil looked at Hammer, who shrugged indifferently.
All right. But Jack, if we have to use our swords, get out of the way fast and stay out of the way. Is that clear?
Sure.
Jack stared unmoved into the dark opening in the floor.
Who goes first?
I do. It's my job.
McNeil checked the amount of candle left in his lantern, hefted his sword once, and made his way carefully down the stairs. The light from his lantern moved slowly ahead of him, revealing more steps falling down into the darkness. Hammer drew the sword on his hip and followed McNeil down the stairs. Jack retrieved his torch from the wall holder and followed Hammer down into the darkness. Halfway down the steps, McNeil glanced back over his shoulder at Hammer.
You should draw your other sword, Hammer. You're going to need it down here.
No, not yet.
I've seen what lives in these tunnels. There are great crawling giants.
I said not yet! I'll draw the device when I have to and not before. The beast isn't the only thing here that sleeps lightly.
McNeil remembered some of the whispers he'd heard about the infernal devices during the Demon War and shuddered despite himself. There were those who said the damned swords were more of a threat than the demons could ever be. McNeil squared his shoulders and carried on down the stairs, and he and Hammer and Jack quickly disappeared into the gloom until even the glow of the lantern and the torch was gone, smothered in darkness. Flint and the dancer shut the trapdoor after them, surprised at the weight of the great slab of solid oak. They looked at the two steel bolts, glanced at each other, and then stepped back from the trapdoor.
Bolt it. You never know.
No. If they have to retreat in a hurry, they're going to need a quick exit.
What if they bring something back with them?
That's what we're here for.
Confident, aren't you, little man? When this is over, I'm going to enjoy tearing your reputation into shreds, Blade Master.
Deluded, aren't you, hero?
Denser looked thoughtfully at the closed trap door.
We'll give them an hour, and then we'll go down looking for them.
Right.
It would make more sense for us to get away and pass on the word to your reinforcements.
You can do that. The rest of us are rangers. Rangers don't run. We don't leave cases half finished. We know our duty.
Besides, Duncan's our friend. We can't abandon him. If he dies, we avenge him.
If we can.
The stairs seemed to fall away forever. Darkness pressed close around the narrow pool of light as McNeil led Hammer and Scarecrow Jack down into the earth. McNeil held his lantern out before him, but its light didn't travel far. Jack's torch made hardly any impression at all on the gloom, but the constant crackling of the flame was a familiar, comforting sound. McNeil moved carefully from step to step, refusing to be hurried by Hammer's crowding presence at his back. McNeil counted the steps off silently as he went, looking forward to the moment when he could leave them behind for the relative safety of the earth tunnel. 13 steps. Unlucky for some. But on reaching the 13th step, he discovered there was another step beneath it. McNeil's pulse quickened, and he made himself breathe slowly and evenly. There was nothing to worry about. He must have miscounted the first time, that was all. 13, 14. It was an easy mistake to make. But there was another step beyond the 14th, and another after that. McNeil counted 20 steps and then stopped. He leaned forward and held his lantern out as far as he could. The steps stretched away before him, disappearing down into darkness, and there was no sign of the tunnel.
What's the matter? Why have we stopped?
Stairways different. There are too many steps. The beast must be dreaming again.
So what do we do? Just keep going and hope the stairs will lead us somewhere eventually?
There's nothing else we can do. There's no other way down. Let's go. It's cold here.
Cold as the grave.
McNeil pretended he hadn't heard that and started down the stairs again. After a while, he stopped counting. He found the rising number too disturbing. They were already far below the cellar, and still the steps led on down into the dark. It was bitterly cold and growing colder all the time. McNeil's breath steamed quickly on the air before him, and frost had begun to form on his hair and clothes. His bare face and hands were growing numb, and he had to clutch his lantern and his sword tightly to be sure he wouldn't drop them. The continuing stench of decay and corruption seemed to be changing subtly. The sickly sweet smell was just as strong, but it had slowly acquired a new alien taint that McNeil found strangely unsettling. It was unlike anything he'd ever smelled before, and he hoped fervently that he'd never have to smell it again. It grated on his nerves like an itch he couldn't scratch until he felt like hacking at the air with his sword.
It has slept here, deep in the earth for centuries beyond count.
McNeil clutched his sword hilt tightly until his fingers ached. The smell and the darkness and the constant unease reminded him of his time in the Darkwood, and for a moment an old fear moved within him. He pushed it firmly away and continued down the steps. And then his foot jarred on an uneven surface, and the lantern's golden light showed him the mouth of an earth tunnel. Duncan moved cautiously forward into the opening and waited for the others to join him. It wasn't the tunnel he remembered. This larger passage was easily 7 to 8 feet in diameter. The rough earth ceiling was cracked and broken, and the crumbling walls looked as though they might collapse at any moment.
Not much room to fight.
Hammer grinned as the ranger turned to glare at him.
Jumpy, aren't you?
I've got good reason to be. The last time I came down here, I found something nasty waiting for me.
Duncan looked about him, frowning.
But that was in a different tunnel. It was smaller than this, and the walls were slick with blood. Maybe this time we'll find some sign of the missing bodies.
Or the gold. Let's not forget about the gold.
Hammer reached out and prodded one of the walls, and the loose earth broke apart under his fingers.
Shoddy workmanship. They could at least have shored it up.
McNeil looked at him.
Men didn't build this tunnel, Hammer, any more than they built that stairway. The beast is stirring in its sleep, and we're walking in one of its dreams.
Pretty realistic dream.
Yes. Let's just hope the beast isn't having a nightmare.
The three men looked uncertainly at each other for a moment. Hammer's hand rose halfway to the hilt of the longsword on his back, and then fell away.
Let's get moving. There's no telling how long we've got before the beast wakes, and we're still no nearer to finding the bodies or the gold.
I've just had an unpleasant thought. If we're walking inside the beast's dream, what happens to this tunnel when the beast wakes up?
Next time you have an unpleasant thought, do us all a favor and keep it to yourself. How the hell am I supposed to know what will happen? The tunnel is real enough for the moment, and that's what matters. Now let's go. We're wasting time.
Duncan strode off down the tunnel, and the others moved quickly after him. McNeil held his lantern out before him, and the gentle glow showed him the tunnel stretching away into the gloom and sinking gradually deeper into the earth. McNeil looked on fear as a weakness, and his own fear as a hidden shame. Fear was something you acknowledged but never gave in to. If there was a problem, you faced it, with force if necessary. If you couldn't beat it, you retreated and tried again later, and went on trying until you did beat it. Real fear, the sheer overwhelming terror that paralyzes you with dread, McNeil had never felt that, and had nothing but contempt for those who had. Yet deep down, he knew that wasn't true. He had felt such a fear, once, long ago during the long night, when the demons came swarming out of the darkness in a never-ending flood, throwing themselves against his sword again and again and again. He'd wanted to run then, and perhaps he would have if the dawn hadn't come in time to save him. The blue moon passed, the sun rose, and the demons fell back. But he had wanted to run. Now he was back in the darkness again, surrounded by the stench of death and corruption, on his way to fight a creature older and more powerful than the demons at their worst. And this time, buried in the depths of the earth, there was no hope of any dawn to save him. Fear curled and writhed within him, twisting his gut and bringing a hot sweat to his face and hands, despite the freezing cold. He could feel his hands shaking. He was afraid, and all his experience and pride weren't strong enough to drive that fear away. He wanted to turn and run back down the tunnel and up the stairs and into the fort, and just keep on running until he'd left the border fort far behind him. He could do it. He could. No one would reprimand him if he chose just to report the situation to his superior officers and let them deal with it. There were those who'd say he'd done the only sensible thing, but he wouldn't be one of them. He knew differently. Constance had said the beast must be slain before it woke, or it might be too late, and McNeil believed her. Duncan couldn't run away. He had his duty and his honor, and as long as he had a sword and strength of arm to swing it, he would do what he knew to be right, no matter how scared he was. The tunnel's descent gradually became more evident as the stone floor fell steadily away. McNeil tried not to think about how deep under the fort they'd come. The thought of all that weight over his head was disturbing.
How deep does this go? We've been following this tunnel for ages.
It's not much further. We're getting very close now.
McNeil stopped suddenly, and the others stopped with him. He looked thoughtfully at Scarecrow Jack, an idea tugging at his mind.
Constance said you had qualities that might help us. What kind of magic have you got, Jack? Do you have the sight?
I don't think so. I just get feelings about things. About the forest and what lives in it. And sometimes the trees give me some of their strength to help me do what needs to be done. But only sometimes.
Do you have any feelings about this place? About the beast?
There's something not far ahead of us.
Jack's eyes shone vague and thoughtful.
It's sleeping, but it knows we're coming. It's very cold and very hungry.
The three men clapped their hands to their ears in pain. When silence returned, McNeil looked at Hammer as the three men slowly took their hands away from their ears.
It's time to draw the sword. The device!
No, not yet.
We need it!
You don't understand. You don't understand at all.
In the cellar, Wilde sat on one of the piles of rubbish and swung his legs back and forth impatiently. He hated waiting. As long as he was doing something, anything, he was fine. But waiting gave his nerves the chance to work on him. He fiddled aimlessly with his longbow, checking that the string was taut for the 100th time, and letting his hand drop again to the sword at his side. He looked across at Flint and the dancer, sitting casually beside the trapdoor. The wait didn't seem to be bothering them. They just sat together, talking quietly, their faces calm and easy. Wilde smiled slightly. Jessica never had been one for getting rattled. He remembered her standing on her own in a corner of the castle courtyard, waiting for the huge gates to open on the last great battle of the Demon War. She'd looked tall and splendid in her shining chainmail, her night-dark hair pulled back in an elaborately tied ponytail. Her face shone calm then, too, as she slowly and methodically sharpened the edge of her sword. He'd been pacing up and down and sweating buckets, half out of his mind with fear, but her poise and calm shamed him into cooling down and recovering his composure. Her confidence helped him find his. He'd never forgotten that.
Jessica.
Now they were together once again, getting ready for another battle. The situation hadn't changed much, but the people had. Himself, most of all. He shrugged the memories from him. What was gone, and best forgotten. Wilde looked carefully at the dancer. He'd always thought the man would be bigger. After all, he was a blade master, one of the legendary perfect killers. No one knew exactly how many men the dancer had killed in his time. There'd been so many, and yet seen up close, he didn't look much at all. Throw a stick in any tavern and you'd hit a dozen just like him. Sir Gwellem hadn't looked like much either, but all the king's guards hadn't been enough to stop that blade master when he went berserk. They needed Wilde to do that. His smile died away as he stared at the dancer. 10 years ago, he would have been sitting where the dancer was now, smiling and talking with Jessica. 10 years ago, he'd had it all. He'd been a hero, and Jess had been proud to stand at his side. Now he was just another outlaw, and the dancer had taken his place with Jess. Wilde plucked at the taut bowstring, feeling it thrum under his fingertips. There was power there, power to maim and kill and make the world go the way it ought to go. The odds were he'd be going into some kind of battle soon, and in all the excitement, who could possibly blame Wilde if one of his arrows happened to go just a little astray and shoot the damned Blademaster in the back? And with the dancer out of the way, getting the gold away from the Rangers would be relatively easy. At the end of the day, he would have it all again. A fortune in gold, his freedom from Hammer, and Jess back at his side where she belonged. He'd talk her into it. He'd always been able to talk her into anything. Constance leaned back against the cold stone wall and watched Wilde unobtrusively. Of all the three outlaws, Wilde worried her the most. Hammer was dangerous, but she could understand what drove him, even if he didn't. Scarecrow Jack was obviously only there because he was under Hammer's thumb. But Wilde, there was something disturbing about the quiet, scowling bowman. When Wilde first spoke with Flint, there had been something almost sad and tragic about him. But now all Constance could see in his face was a harsh, pitiless brutality that made her wish for a sword with which to defend herself. Not that she was scared of him, of course. If he was stupid enough to try anything with her, he'd soon discover she had more than enough magic left to take care of the likes of him. And yet there was something about Wilde that both attracted and repelled her, as though she could see the tragedy of what he'd been, as well as the brute he'd become.
Pity.
The witch shook her head uncertainly and turned her attention to the closed trapdoor in the middle of the floor. She wished she could have gone with Duncan, but she'd known she had to be sensible. She was vulnerable to the beast, and it knew that, even in its sleep. Her presence would only have endangered Duncan, and he was in enough danger down there as it was, at least partly from himself. Duncan never bent with the wind, never allowed himself to be weak. But even the strongest steel will break if it can't bend a little under pressure.
Duncan, watch your back, and come back safely.
Flint and the dancer sat side by side, waiting patiently for the call to action as they had so many times before. The dancer just sat where he was, relaxed and ready, his sword resting casually across his thighs. The dancer showed no sign of nerves or excitement, but then he never did. His eyes were far away, and Flint wondered what he was thinking about. They'd been partners and lovers for almost 8 years now, but she still had only the vaguest notion of what went on in his mind when he removed himself from the world like that. The dancer wasn't like other people. Half the time he was off in a world of his own. Flint never doubted that he loved her, but he wasn't an easy man to get to know. He didn't say much, and for a long time now he had been content to let Flint do the talking for both of them. He wasn't slow-witted or even shy. He just didn't have much to say. If he wanted to make a point, he usually made it with his sword.
Dancer?
Yes?
Do you really think they're going to be able to kill the beast?
Maybe. Hammer's got the infernal device. Those swords are pretty damn powerful.
But if it isn't powerful enough, what are our chances of killing the beast?
Pretty bad, I should think. But we have to try. A lot of people are depending on us.
They usually are. But this time, we could very easily get killed.
Comes with the job.
Are you afraid, Giles?
No. Fear just gets in the way. Are you worried?
Yes.
Don't be. I'm here with you. I won't let anything happen to you, Jessica.
She held his hand tightly. They looked at each other for a long moment. Flint and Denzer leapt to their feet, swords at the ready.
They found the beast.
Or it's found them.
Constance raised her head sharply and listened, sensing something moving not far away.
Listen, can you hear anything?
They all stood very still, straining their ears against the silence. Flint and the dancer exchanged a glance and hefted their swords. Wilde got to his feet and knocked an arrow to his bow. Flint looked at him and shook her head.
No, Edmund. You and the witch stay here and guard the trap door, while Giles and I take a look at what's happening upstairs.
For a moment, she thought Wilde might argue, but the moment passed, and he just shrugged and sat down again. Flint hesitated, wanting to explain that it wasn't that she didn't trust him. But in the end, she said nothing. He wouldn't have believed her anyway. Flint strode over to the cellar door and swung it open. The sounds seemed to have stopped for the moment. The dancer came up behind her and offered her one of the torches from the wall brackets. She took it and started up the stone steps that led back to the ground floor. The dancer stayed close behind her, sword at the ready. Constance shut the door behind them. Flint and the dancer made their way up the stairs, moved cautiously out into the narrow passageway at the top, and looked about them, listening carefully. The torch's light seemed to carry a lot further now that it was out of the cellar, and the flickering flame showed an empty corridor stretching away before them. Flint frowned unhappily. The sounds were louder and closer now, but she still couldn't work out what they were or where they were coming from. They were mostly soft, scuffling noises, and they came from everywhere and nowhere, from ahead of them and behind them. The only thing Flint was sure of was that they weren't natural sounds.
Could be rats. Rats in the walls.
I've heard rats before. This is different. Can you tell where the sounds are coming from?
No, but whatever it is, it's getting closer.
Flint scowled. The two started down the passage. Shadows swayed around, lunging menacingly forward when Flint shifted her hold on the torch. At first, it hadn't seemed as cold in the corridor as it had in the cellar, but it was beginning to change. The temperature was dropping rapidly. The whorls of hoarfrost patterning the walls grew discernibly thicker, and a pale mist formed on the still air. Flint stopped dead, and the dancer stopped beside her. He looked at her inquiringly, but her mind was working furiously.
Mist? Inside the fort? That's not possible. Not possible! Not this deep in the fort. So far away from the outside air.
The beast is dreaming. Dreaming about how the world was when it last walked the earth.
How long had the beast slept if all it remembered of the world was fog and ice and cold? Flint clutched her sword and shook her head determinedly. She'd worry about the why of things later, when she had the time. Right now, all that mattered was finding out what was making the damned noises and how dangerous it was. Flint gestured for the dancer to stay put, and then walked slowly down the passage, listening carefully between each step. The sounds seemed to be coming from all around her, from the floor and the ceiling as much as the walls. Long strands of mist curled and twisted on the corridor air, growing thicker as they blended into a pearly haze. Flint realized she was getting too separated from the dancer and stopped where she was. She looked back and saw that the mist had thickened into a fog behind her. The dancer was only a dark shadow, and the cellar door was lost to sight. Flint moved quickly back down the corridor to join the dancer, and without exchanging a word, they stood back to back, swords at the ready.
Those noises are getting louder.
Yeah. I don't like this, Giles. It's too planned.
So, what do you think? A cautious retreat back to the cellar?
Yeah. We're too cut off here. And they're too cut off down there. Let's go.
They moved cautiously back down the corridor, searching the thickening gray haze for any sign of attack. Flint began to think she saw something moving in the mists. The dancer stayed close to her, and they drew near the cellar door. Whatever was in the corridor with them, neither of them wanted to turn their backs on it. Flint was glad the dancer was there with her. His quiet presence was infinitely comforting. The mist suddenly thickened into an enveloping fog, a great milky white mass that seemed to glow with its own eerie light. Shadows moved in the fog, tall and thin and only vaguely human in shape. They faded in and out of visibility as they moved, and Flint couldn't even be sure how many there were. She glanced at the dancer to make sure he saw them too, and drew confidence from his grim smile and ready sword. The shadows drew steadily closer, but Flint didn't dare back away any faster. They might think she was running from them. One of the shadows stepped suddenly out of the mist to face her, and Flint stared at it in shocked silence. The creature stood easily 8 feet tall, bent and hunched over in the low-roofed passageway. It was a dirty white in color and horribly thin, so that it looked more like a collection of bones than a living being. Its narrow frame was held together by long, ropey muscles that stirred and writhed like restless worms under the coarse skin. Its arms were almost 4 feet long, the bony hands dangling down well past its knees, and the twig-like fingers ended in long, curving claws. The elongated head ended in a ferociously grinning mouth with dozens of dagger-like teeth. Its eyes were scarlet slits, without pupil or retina. The bony feet carried the creature slowly forward toward the two rangers. Its horrid grin widened slightly.
What the hell is that? Some kind of demon?
I don't think so. I think it lived at the same time as the beast. I once saw pictures of something like this in a book that came from the Northern Ice Steppes. They called such creatures trolls. They're supposed to be extinct.
Then what are they doing here?
The beast is remembering them.
It's got too good a memory for my liking. What do we do, Jessica?
Get ready. On the count of three, I'm going to turn and run for the cellar door. You hold them off until I've got the door open, and then get the hell away from those things and join me. Got it?
Got it.
Watch your back, Giles.
Count on it.
Flint flashed him a quick grin.
1, 2, 3.
Flint turned and ran down the corridor. The troll started to go after her. The dancer moved quickly forward to block its way. The creature lifted its clawed hands to strike at him, and the dancer's sword flashed through a short, vicious arc. The troll tried to throw itself backwards, but couldn't react quickly enough. The sword slammed into its prominent ribcage and punched through the sternum and out again in a flurry of blood. The troll sank to its knees, clutching at the gaping wound with both hands. Blood ran between its fingers in a steady stream and collected in a steaming pool on the cold stone floor. More trolls suddenly appeared out of the mists and moved toward the dancer with murder in their crimson eyes. Behind them, more shadows stirred in the fog, waiting to be born again into the world of men. The dancer smiled and swept his sword back and forth before him. Flint ran to the door at the end of the corridor. The cellar door loomed up out of the fog before Flint, and she had to skid to a halt to avoid crashing into it. She slammed her sword into its scabbard and fumbled at the doorknob with cold, numbed fingers.
Come on. Come on.
She could barely feel it, but finally succeeded in opening the door.
Dancer!
The dancer came flying out of the fog toward her with the trolls close behind. There were too many of them to count. The dancer shot through the open doorway and Flint followed him. She spun around, slammed the door shut in the trolls' grinning faces and looked frantically for the bolts. There was only one, and she pushed it home. Something slammed into the door on the other side, and Flint and the dancer fell back a step as the door shuddered in its frame. They leaned against the cold stone wall a moment as they got their breath back.
That bolt isn't going to hold for long. You'd be better off in the cellar. We should barricade that door.
Right.
How many of those things are there altogether?
Too many.
Flint decided not to think about that for the moment. The two rangers hurried down the steps toward the relative safety of the cellar. Dancer took one last look at the shuddering door. Narrow wisps of mist had already begun to trickle past the closed door. Flint threw open the door at the bottom, charged through, and waited impatiently for the dancer to join her. The moment he did, she thrust her torch into his hand, slammed the door shut, locked it, and pushed home both of the bolts. She leaned back against the door. The dancer calmly slipped the flaring torch into the nearest wall holder. Constance and Wilde looked at them blankly.
What the hell is going on? What did you run into up there?
Creatures that were supposed to have become extinct centuries ago. Tall, bony things with teeth and claws. Trolls.
They're only legends.
Will you all shut the hell up and help me barricade this door? There are at least a dozen of those legends on their way down here right now, and this door isn't going to keep them out for long.
Together, the four of them dragged some of the heavier rubbish over against the door and heaved it into position. They were just manhandling the last of the junk into place when they heard muffled footsteps on the other side of the door. The Rangers and the outlaw backed away quickly and braced themselves. Flint looked at Constance.
Can't your magic do anything to keep them out?
The witch shrugged unhappily.
I don't have much magic left, but I can try.
She raised her left hand and a soft blue flame formed around her fingers, jumping and spitting.
Domine Inferu!
The sputtering flame flew away from her hand to sink into the wood of the door. The banging and clawing stopped immediately. For a few seconds there was silence. A frown burrowed between Constance's eyebrows, and then the hammering suddenly started again. Constance shook her head.
They're too strong for me. I'm a witch, not a sorceress. They'll be through that door in a matter of minutes, and what magic I have left isn't going to stop them.
Isn't there anything you can do?
Well, perhaps a little something to make life easier for us.
Constance glared at the thick layer of ice covering the floor, and it cracked and shattered and fell apart into tiny pieces. Constance smiled slightly.
There. That should help our footing when we have to face the creatures.
Wilde looked at her.
What makes you so sure we'll have to face them? The door's solid oak, and the barricade looks pretty good to me.
It won't even slow them down. These trolls aren't real, so they can be as strong as they need to be. The beast is very near to waking now, and it senses we are a danger to it.
The door began to shake. The barricade shuddered in sympathy and then toppled away from the door as it split suddenly from top to bottom. The four defenders backed quickly away, the jagged crack in the wood grew wider as they watched. And then the two halves of the door were torn away and the doorway was full of grinning trolls. Their bony hands twitched constantly and the lantern light shone dully on the long claws. Flint and the dancer stepped forward to put themselves between the trolls and the witch. Wilde knocked an arrow to his bow. The troll surged forward into the cellar. Wilde's bow thrummed, and the first troll was thrown back by the arrow jutting from its eye. Two more of the creatures fell to Wilde's bow, and then he had to fall back as the first rush of trolls broke against Flint and the dancer. The two rangers stood unflinchingly together, their swords flashing brightly in the dim light. They cut through the masked trolls with deceptive ease, as though the bony creatures were no more substantial than the mists they came from. The trolls' blood flew through the air like a ghastly rain, smoking and sizzling where it collected on the broken ice covering the floor. Some of the blood splashed the dancer's wrist and burned the bare skin, but he didn't let it distract him from his work. The trolls could only get through the doorway a few at a time, and despite their frenzied attack, the dancer wouldn't retreat a step. He was a blade master, and now he had a chance to show what that really meant. His sword swept back and forth faster than the eye could follow, leaving a trail of blood in his wake. He lunged and recovered and swung again, all in a single breath, his blade scything through the howling trolls. Their clawed hands reached for him with an unrelenting fury, their great jaws snapping at his unprotected face. But always he was an extra inch out of reach, and the dying trolls fell before him to scream and writhe on the gore-soaked floor. Flint fought at his side, grinning fiercely as she swung her blood-soaked blade. Trolls lay dead and dying to either side of her, fluttering up the doorway. She might not be as fast or as skillful as the dancer, but she'd been a guard all her adult life, and she knew more about swordsmanship than most men ever would. She fought in the last great battle of the Demon War in ill-fitting chainmail and a borrowed sword, and after that, there wasn't much that could daunt her. She cut and hacked at the grinning, bony faces before her and refused to feel the growing ache in her arms and back. She was a ranger, and she would fight till she fell. Wilde fired arrow after arrow past the two rangers, striking down the trolls as they tried to claw their way past Flint and the dancer by sheer force of numbers. He lost track of how many of the creatures he'd killed, and still they came surging through the narrow doorway. And all too soon, Wilde ran out of arrows. He placed his longbow and his empty quiver carefully to one side, out of the way. Wilde drew his sword. He hefted it once, then looked at the two rangers struggling against the endless tide of inhuman creatures.
Just like old times, eh, Jess?
He looked quickly about him, just in case case there was another exit he hadn't noticed before, but there was only the trapdoor, and Wild decided very early on that wild horses weren't going to drag him down there. No, bad as it was, his only hope lay with the Rangers. He shrugged and, choosing his moment carefully, slipped in beside Flint and added his sword to hers. The trolls fell before Wild, and their death cries were a comfort to him. It had been a long time since he'd fought in a situation where the odds weren't stacked heavily in his favor. It took him only a few seconds to remember why. A man could get killed sticking his neck out like this. But still, he fought on, because there was no other choice open to him. After a while, some of his old skills came back to him, and his sword sliced through the air in shining, deadly arcs. If Flint could have found the time to look at him, she might have seen echoes in the bowman's face of the Edmund Wild she once knew so many years ago. The witch called Constance raised her hands in a stance of summoning and drew the remains of her power about her. Most of her magic was gone, but she drew on what little was left to her for one last effort.
Incendia!
A blinding glare gathered around her upraised hands. The trolls nearest fell back as their bones cracked and splintered within their bodies. A slow headache began to beat in Constance's left temple, and a steady trickle of blood seeped from her left nostril. Constance ignored it. Her body would stand up to the strain for as long as it had to, or it wouldn't. There was nothing she could do about it. The four defenders fought on, blocking the entrance to the cellar with their bodies and their skill and their courage. Trolls fell and died before them, but there were always more to take their place. There were always more. Deep in the earth below the fort, the tunnel finally began to level out. McNeil stumbled to a halt, and Hammer and Jack crowded in beside him, staring into the pitch-black opening that ended the tunnel. McNeil frowned. He could tell there was some kind of drop immediately ahead of him, but that was all. Maybe the tunnel led into some kind of cave. He moved cautiously forward until he was standing right on the edge of the tunnel floor, and then held his lantern out before him. The pale golden light reflected back from thousands of tiny crystals embedded in the cavern walls. They shone brightly in the darkness, like so many distant stars on a moonless night, illuminating a cavern so huge it took McNeil's breath away. They didn't carry enough light to fill all the cavern. It had to be at least half a mile in diameter and possibly even more in height. The tunnel opened out, high up on a wall, with the cavern floor hundreds of yards below. A narrow ledge ran along the wall, leading from the tunnel mouth to another opening some 50 feet away and perhaps 10 feet lower down. McNeil didn't like the look of the ledge. It was barely 2 feet wide, and the dark stone was cracked and uneven, as though it had only recently been cut from the bare stone wall. McNeil looked down into the darkness and felt a sudden surge of vertigo. He turned his head away and breathed deeply until it settled. Jack and Hammer stood on either side of him, staring out into the cavern. The glowing crystals stared back like so many knowing eyes. Hammer caught his breath for a moment, then quickly let it go in case anyone had noticed. The cavern made him feel small and insignificant, and he didn't like that. Jack studied the narrow ledge cut into the cavern wall and chewed his lower lip dubiously. It looked to be a long way down if someone lost their footing.
How far down is that, do you think?
I don't know. A hell of a long way, whatever it is.
Do you think the beast's down there?
Has to be. But is the gold down there with it? Or could it be in that other opening?
McNeil frowned. Anyone out on that narrow ledge would be very vulnerable to a surprise attack. They'd have to go in single file, hugging the cavern wall all the way. But when all was said and done, he couldn't ignore the opening. Hammer was right. There were only two places down here where the gold could be, and the second opening was the easiest to get to. He nodded slowly.
All right, Hammer. It's worth a try. I'll go first.
Duncan stepped out onto the ledge, testing it carefully before committing all his weight to it. The cracked stone seemed solid enough, and he moved further along the ledge, pressing his shoulder against the cavern wall. He looked down once and immediately wished he hadn't. Heights didn't normally bother him, but this was different, very different. He looked resolutely at the second opening ahead, only some 10 feet below him and 50 feet away. It hadn't looked very far from the tunnel mouth, but out on the ledge it seemed a hell of a long way to go. He leaned even more against the cavern wall and kept going. The solid rock face was a comforting presence. Hammer moved out onto the ledge after him, once he was sure it was safe, and Jack brought up the rear. Of all of them, Jack was the only one unaffected by the long drop. In the forest, he climbed the tallest trees for fun. On the other hand, he hadn't liked the enclosed space of the tunnel at all, so the much larger space of the cavern actually helped to put him at ease. He moved confidently along behind Hammer, holding his torch high and staring happily about him with easy curiosity. The second opening in the cavern wall proved to be the entrance to another tunnel. McNeil crouched down on the ledge before it and studied the circular tunnel in the light of his lantern. It was roughly 7 feet in diameter and appeared to have been bored through the solid rock. Its walls were unnaturally smooth. McNeil's imagination conjured up a picture of some monstrous worm wriggling blindly through the solid stone, and he scowled thoughtfully. For as far as he could see in the lantern light, the tunnel appeared to be deserted. Yet when all was said and done, he wasn't going to discover anything more just squatting there on the ledge. Duncan moved forward into the tunnel. Hammer and Jack followed close behind him. After some 20 or 30 feet, the tunnel opened out into a cave. And in that cave, piled carelessly one upon the other, lay hundreds of stout leather sacks, each bearing the royal imprint of the forest treasury. Hammer pushed past McNeil and ran forward to kneel before the sacks. He grabbed the first one that came to hand and opened it, clawing impatiently at the drawstrings. He thrust his hand into the sack and pulled out a handful of gleaming gold coins. He stared at them for a long moment and then opened his hand and let the coins trickle slowly through his fingers and back into the sack. He smiled gently as he listened to the musical clatter of gold on gold.
100,000 ducats.
Don't get any ideas, Hammer. That gold belongs to the king. That's the way it's going to stay. You're entitled to a reward, and I'll see to it that you get it, but that's all.
Hammer smiled at him, then pulled the sack's drawstrings tight and placed it down by the others. Scarecrow Jack sniffed dismissively and looked around him. He had no use for gold in the forest. He frowned suddenly and held his torch close to the right-hand wall. The extra light revealed a narrow opening, low down on the cave wall and almost obscured by the shadows of the piled-up sacks. He drew McNeil's attention to it, and the two of them crouched down before the opening. It was barely 3 feet in diameter and led into yet another tunnel. Once again, the tunnel walls were unnaturally smooth and even. Jack looked at McNeil.
What do you think? Shall we take a look?
Well, might as well while we're here.
But Jack, keep your eyes open. That gold must have been brought down here for a reason. And I'm starting to get the feeling that so far we've just been led around by the nose. Constance thought the beast could be using the gold as bait to lure us down here.
Jack looked at him uncertainly.
What would the beast want with us?
That's a good question. And I have a strong feeling we're not going to like the answer when we find it. Hammer!
What is it?
There's another tunnel here. Jack and I are going to take a quick look. You want to come along?
Hammer smiled and shook his head.
Somebody had better stay here to look after the gold.
Somehow I just knew you were going to say that. All right, suit yourself. Jack, leave your torch here. We'll make do with the lantern.
He got down on his hands and knees and crawled into the tunnel. Jack handed his torch to Hammer and followed after McNeil. Hammer watched him go and then turned his attention back to the sacks of gold, his lips moving silently as he counted. The narrow tunnel was cramped and slippery, and McNeil crawled along it as quickly as he could. He pushed the lantern along in front of him, but its unsteady light shone dully back from the smooth tunnel walls. The pale golden light made the tunnel seem even smaller than it was, and McNeil could feel a shivering claustrophobia gnawing at the edges of his self-control. Duncan shuffled stubbornly onwards on all fours, peering ahead into the darkness beyond the lantern light. He could hear Jack struggling along behind him, and the quiet grunts and scuffling sounds reminded him suddenly of the crawling giants moving blindly through the tunnels under the earth. He shook his head quickly to clear it, and then his hands slid off the smooth floor and on to rough stone, and he realized the tunnel had opened out into another cave. He crawled out of the tunnel, straightened up painfully, and held his lantern out before him. Jack emerged from the tunnel mouth and got up to stand beside McNeil. They stood together for a while and stared at what they'd found.
No. No, no, no.
Every man, woman, and child who died in the border fort lay piled in one great heap at the back of the cave. They seemed to have just been dumped there and left to rot. The cave had to be 100 feet across, and the bodies filled half of it, stacked from wall to wall and from floor to ceiling. Every corpse showed signs of a violent death, and most were caked with dried blood. McNeil stared grimly at the piled-up bodies and felt painfully helpless. They were dead and gone, and there was nothing he could do about it. The children tore at his heart. The small bodies lay torn, mutilated, and discarded. No child should have to die like that. His hand dropped to the sword at his side, and silently he promised them vengeance, whatever it cost. Jack moved closer to the bodies and looked them over carefully, checking the exact cause of death where he could. He didn't find their presence disturbing in the way that McNeil did. Living in the forest had accustomed him to the presence of death in all its forms, and it no longer affected him on an emotional level. It was just part of the world. And then something very disturbing occurred to him. Jack crouched down to study the floor of the cave. McNeil tore his gaze away from the great mounds of bodies and tried to think with his mind instead of his gut. There was something about both the gold and the bodies that worried him. How did they get down here? Somebody, something must have brought them. Perhaps the crawling giants. McNeil frowned and shook his head. The giants were little more than animals. Besides, they were too large to have managed the ledge on the cavern wall, never mind the last tunnel.
Bring your lantern over here. I found something interesting.
McNeil moved back and crouched down beside him and looked at the cave floor that Jack was studying so intently. It was bare rock with a faint patterning of dust. There were a few vague traces that might have been tracks, but they were too faint for McNeil to read them.
Well, what do you see, Jack?
Footprints. Human footprints. Men, women, and children. So many they overlap each other again and again. There's no other tracks at all. Nobody brought these bodies down here, Sergeant. They walked here.
McNeil gaped at him, then snapped his head around as something stirred on the edge of his vision. One of the corpses opened its eyes and looked at him. Another drew back its blackened lips in something that might have been a smile.
Bloody hell!